Okay, this is Karen Brewster, and today is October 29th, 2025. And here with Clarence Alexander, interviewing him for the Subsistence Research Legacy Project Jukebox. And we are in Fairbanks at his daughter Stephanie's house. Clarence is from Fort Yukon and is just in Fairbanks briefly. So we appreciate that we could catch him. Joining me is Bill Schneider here in person, and then Jim Fall is joining us by telephone on a speakerphone on my cell phone. So Clarence, thank you very much for letting us come visit you today.
This would be the kind of first time in my life at a meeting with anybody.
Just to get us started, can you introduce yourself so people who don't know you will know something about you?
Well, I kind of just turned 86, so most of my life I've been living out in the wilderness, you can call it, I guess. I kind of grew up out there till I was about 20 years old, and, living off the land. And that was my favorite place to be. We have the way we were brought up was our family was always living out in the country. We come into a town mostly used to come in for the summer. But we live we had everything in the world around us to have a good living. Mm-hmm. Our areas were loaded with maybe about five different kind of fish, and there's these are on our lakes, different kinds of whitefish. There's these fish are also rich. We have well, what can you say? I mean, I can just name all the animals that we have in our neighborhood, and we take care of everything around us. And at the same time, one of the things that the first thing I remember as a young person was our uncle take us, for this time of the year, it's kind of getting cool, and the fall time, the water is freezing, the thin ice. When that happens, the willows that are growing are also leaning into the creeks. The creeks are not very big, but what happens is that once it freezes down, my uncle, all the kids in the neighborhood right there where we're at is living out there. There's cabins there, and I don't know why I'm starting there, but when we go down with them, we're all walking on the ice, thin ice, and what it does is cut all these willows that are along the creek all the way down to the main river. These are lakes that are all about five, six, seven different big lakes are connected that are going into the river. And what we're doing is that as young kids, I was about 6 or 7 years old, we all follow my uncle. He cuts down everything. We take it back into the woods. We don't put anything in the water. It goes into the woods, all the way down to the other end where it runs into the main river. So this is done on a yearly, pretty much I guess a yearly basis, so that to keep the fish at least as a free kite. In other words, it's easier for fish going, and these are little ones that are in the fall time that are leaving those lakes and going back into the Yukon River or wherever. All the young ones, they head for the river where they stay during the winter. And come springtime, they go back into the lakes. And that's when the river lakes are getting high with high water again in spring, all these little ones, they go back into all the lakes where they feed on all the food that exists there for them. So somehow or another, a lot of these things I'm saying is like that kind of activity were cut off by our foreign people that all of a sudden said, don't do this and don't do that business. That's because they're the boss, I guess. I don't know how to say it, but it's the people that you've never seen before in your life all of a sudden have a complete operation of owning everything in where we live. Don't do this, don't do that. And so that kind of activity, to this day, we haven't we haven't really bothered to. So what I see within my lifetime is that there's beavers are coming into the places, blocking up the creeks and blocking up the lakes and the fish that are the tons of it, and yet it's kind of the fish is having a hard time moving in and out, and that's happening right now. It's interesting that I was just thinking about this morning. I got hired by I kind of never went to school, and so when I turned about 90 years, but I was 90 years old, I guess. Not 90.
19?
30
years old.
I was
30
years
okay.
old, and I went to, decided to go to university. I had my little bit of schooling. But they said, you have to be a graduate before you enter this school. So that didn't work for me, but somehow or another the system, just like when the school here, college, all of a sudden it got opened up. So I went downtown and here in Fairbanks, came over here. So I took a test. I told him I want to take a test on math and English. So I took those two, and I just happened to, I made it. I actually was, I passed. So then I went back. Well, even then I don't get to go to university. But then they changed, so all of a sudden anybody can go, they said, to college. So I took it on, and that's where I got involved in with all the little animals and whatever it is that I study with. And so there are different courses that I was taking, modern math, or different activities. So I went for about 3 years, and I said, out the hell with it. And so that's exactly what I did. But and then I got a job with the state of Alaska. And I went to almost every village in Alaska, meeting with community members that what do you live on? What do you use for food? Your way of doing it. What do you? So I went to working for the state. I went to each village, and I had I hired individual, mostly high school graduates, and I had them lead me around their community. And so that way I can translate the, I only talk my language, and I can't talk their language, but there are young kids, young boys and girls that I hire to do translation. And by doing that, I got all the information that how they survive within their areas. So that was kind of very, very interesting. It's very interesting because the people that are living in Alaska have different source of food that's available to them. And if you go that way, I went to one village, just to mention the village, the only food they had was a little jackfish. That's good. Up there where I come from, they were this big.
Six, those big king salmon, you mean? Those big...
Well, what happens is where it's growing, in the fall time, the place where down the highways, there are places where all these little fish, they leave the place as soon as in the fall time the water is starting to go down. They head for that river there, and they go down the Yukon, and the Yukon River is quite a big river, and it goes all direction, and you will find these little ones going into all those lakes, and there they can get pretty big too, because they're at the mouth of these lakes, at the mouth of them, and now it's getting so that they're getting into the lakes. And so But what's happening in the meantime is I mentioned that my uncle took all of us living out there in a shawl, we call it, please. And that's the name of our village, the place where we grew up. Alexander Village, they call it. There, what was happening was we also got people that coming in and telling us, don't do this and don't that, don't do that. This is the way that people used to live and manage their own areas. Like beavers swimming up those lakes. We don't mind if they build a house around the edge of the lakes, but we don't want them to block up these lakes that are there, that have fish going back and forth, back and forth. So when I was about five or six years old, my uncle took us all of us there at home. Takes us down there. He cuts all these willows along the edge of these creeks, and we put back in the woods. So that kind of activity kind of stopped. It's stopping now. Because a few years ago, when I was working for the state, when I went to the village, what I found out is, hey, this creek is getting blocked up by beaver now, they said. They're telling us about the creek that get jammed up. They're closing it up. The beavers are closing up that. And what they're doing is that they're building up this system on the front of the creeks that holds back the water, and that is happy. Beaver is happy, not the fish. The fish have a hard time getting back out, in and out. So that's where we are today. But nobody listens. Nobody listens. What do you mean? Well, you go to Beaver, you go to Fort Yukon, you go to Chalkeetsuk, you go to Circle, you go to Beaver, you go to all those villages there. Every one of them got an activity going on that's holding back some of the activities of fish that used to exist, and they're having more hard time now. And going back, getting into the areas where they can feed them on their food. And that's, so that's also the young people there are, when I went to the village, that's the first thing they tell me. First thing they tell us, hey, we're losing our fishes. So, yeah, not only that, but there is fish coming in too that nobody knows about. And very interesting, you can go down a highway over to the ocean, a long ways down that way. Pass around, say, Sitka or down the other way, and that goes along the coastline. It goes up and it enters the Yukon River. Interesting. Well, because as far as salmon is concerned, people a long time ago, everybody was out there getting salmon. They use, they have a system of, they didn't have fish wheels, but they did have a way of dipping in for fish. But their saw is those fish that are what I have to be honest, I didn't eat a king salmon. I never did. I was just telling you that I would never eat it. We use it for bait. We use it for feeding our family if you want to do it that way. There's a lot of people using it for trapping. They use it for bait. And we had stores in Fort Yukon that used to buy big bundles of it so that they can sell it to the trappers. The trappers were buying lots of it, salmon. And I'll eat dry ones maybe, not too often. I'd rather eat nice, good, there's different kinds of whitefish. Real nice fat ones and rich and tasty but our family never bothered to eat it. My stepfather we'd go to the store for him and stores are selling you could cut it and freeze it, it's frozen, so they weigh it and they sell it to you. So that's a kind of I didn't get any. I lived at fish camps all summer long helping Grandpa. I pick up fish for him from the fish wheel, pack it up to a place where he can cut it and hang it and dry it, and then he sells it and he gets groceries to go out trapping. And that's how it works, because that way it goes out there and they're out there all winter. We pretty much live out there all winter, and that's the way we were. And the schooling that we go to is also kind of like when we go out there, we're out there till December, January and February. Those are kind of months that we're in town. We come to Fort Yukon, and that's the time that we go to school. So that's not. I fluently speak my language. There's no problem with that. I actually wrote a complete book on my language. You can get it and you can learn it. It took me 2 years to put the book together, but I did not make any words other than what I did was my elders were telling stories and we recorded it, and then I used those same language and put it in the dictionary. But anyway, our way of life out there was, what can I say? We got rabbits, we got ground squirrels, we got practically wild chickens, two or three different kinds. All kinds of food is available. We're not out there. We do not, as far as I know, we're not killing off anything that we don't have to. The only time you do that is when you're looking for. I always think, the way I think about it is that if I'm hungry, if I think that the sucker is waiting for me, I'm there. And kind of, that's just the way it thinks so.
Do you remember when you were working with the Department of Fish and Game on their research projects?
Yeah. Well, that's how I found out that there's not only king salmon. There's lots of fish that have places where their food is available for them. And that's where they're hanging out. And like where I grew up, we have, maybe about six different kind of fish. And it's rich, and I don't throw anything away. I can eat the whole damn thing. I just don't eat the bones, okay? And we catch, if I see a beaver come around a bend in our cabin, we shoot it. Because what we're doing is we're protecting our lake. If they block the lake, and so when I work for the state, I visit these village, and what I'm finding out is that every village I've been to, they showed me where the blocks are. It's blocking up the creeks. It's blocking up the creeks, and the fish is not as not when they used to get hundreds of them, they don't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're hardly. It's getting harder and harder. The beavers are closing up the creeks. It's blocking it up. It keeps going, building the things up, and it does it with wild material, willows, mud, builds it up, and the fish will stay on the other side. Those that come in springtime are flip when the water, at least then the fish are kind of moving.
Mm-hmm.
But then that doesn't take all that long time.
When you were working for the state and you went to those villages,
yes.
How did the communities feel about the state coming in and asking questions?
That wasn't the question I asked. And, what I learned is that they also meet the game warden. They're out there somewhere, the game warden is going to be around there. So, I met an old man, 104 years old, and his grandson with him, down the road, further down. That old man, he told me, let me check your bag. He took his shotgun or rifle out and he didn't go and check nothing. That's all he said. I've been on this world long enough, and I'm only trying to keep my life going, and you're not going to take anything away from me, and that's just the way it is. And this young man that I met at that going with his grandpa, he said he was, he just watched. He didn't say nothing but just listened to his grandfather. So that's, the game warden is just kind of walk away. And he's actually, well, he's only out there one, just getting the food to eat, that's all. He's not killing the whole goddamn outfit. It's a difference. So.
When the subsistence division people came in and started asking questions about what people were hunting and fishing, did people have that same response as with a game warden? Or was it different?
No, game warden don't ask questions. It's zero. They're looking for trouble. They're looking for how crooked it seems like we're doing. But all it is is kind of helping out, just maintaining your life, that's all. As far as I know, I've never seen any waste going on. I never see anything just deliberately killing animals. If I'm hungry, I just go out there and catch myself a grouse. And that's all. I'm not going to start shooting down and everything, you know. But,
do you remember why you decided to take the job to work with the subsistence division?
Well, I was trying to get myself educated in a certain way. It had nothing to do with fishing game. It was the courses I was taking was just to see if I could actually, I was able to take higher, different way of looking at English in a different way. It's the only way I speak was in my language. I am and I still do. It's getting down to the point where now that I'm probably almost all our young people are like my daughter, the professional in their English, and yet me and I. What I did was, when I was when I turned 20 years old, I went to Fort Yukon. So Fort Yukon was all of a sudden full of white people. most of them were military. And the base of their setting up the system so they can watch out for our neighbors that are looking down on us. But anyway, These people that are there also are grabbing all the women that are around there. So I ended up with nothing. And so I was 20 years old, I decided, what the hell with this problem? I'm going to go find out, see if I can find myself somebody down California. That's where there's lots of nice looking women, I thought. What I see in TVs, or not TV, but movies. So I did go down there. Got on the airplane and went down to California. When I was down there, I also I went to work at a factory, a food factory. They make all kinds of goddamn things, some stuff. There's one thing that I saw that was happening was I see people have a get a drink and they put little red plant cherry. Yeah. Well, the sucker ain't red when you get to California. It's green or whatever. It turns red when they dye it. So after that, to this day, I never took another damn bite out of a cherry. And I don't have my drink. Because it looks good, tastes good, or whatever. Not when I'm working in a factory and making a damn thing and making a poison. That's what it's all me, not then.
Do you remember working with Dave Anderson? Do you remember him? Fish and Game, you guys did work together?
Yeah. You lived in Fairbanks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you remember the kinds of things you did together.
Well, it was getting information from the elders. Talking about the lifestyle of their way of surviving back in the old days, and that's even without any connection or to the lower end of the world. He wanted to know, at least, I don't ask questions regarding what are they, why are they asking. That was not my thing. I just know it already, and what they want to know is why. They never say why they want to know, they just want to know, see how the individuals are living their life out there, and most of it is like if I take you to my place where I'm hanging out, there's 10 of us that own land there, and we own the whole thing, and it's nice and clean. There is no garbage there. The lakes are still as clean as they were years ago. And the fish is there. We watch so that the beaver doesn't come in and build the blocks in the way so the fish are not coming in anymore. And so the hardship with these people that they're questioning, or quite different than my way of life. We had we kind of got educated in a different way. And the way they grew up is totally lifestyle is totally living off the land, totally. And and there's no waste going to because we have dogs that are like this. That I used to travel around with dogs. I only used three. I go from where I'm staying, it's 20 miles to town. I just pitch up three. Yeah. Go like hell.
Did you see any impact from the studies that you worked on with fishing game? How they use those studies?
It's a cutoff.
Trouble?
No, it's just cutoff.
Oh, cutoff.
Yeah. There's it seems like if you're living off of land and you're eating from the land, you're in trouble more than anything else.
Mm.
It's like they're breaking the law or something. Because they're not doing it, how the people are doing it, it seems to be not the way it's supposed to be. As far as just because they're walking around, I don't shoot them. I mean, what the hell? I just look at them. I feed them. My two sons were with me out on the river. There comes a black bear, big one. Got two little ones. Come up the bank, and my boat is down there. They come up there and the mother bear look at me. I opened my food box and threw him a piece of fish. And the other one standing there like this, little ones, they look at me, how come I'm not giving anything? And my son there glued to me because he hadn't seen black bear that close before, you know. Actually, I'm not afraid of anything. None at all. Yeah, I kind of grew up out there.
Yeah.
So those studies that that Fish and Game did those help? So you didn't feel like you were breaking the law?
Well, what I was doing was asking the individuals what they are surviving on. A lot of them, they're very direct. I think most of it is what I found out is that the rabbits are moving from one end to the other during 15 years, back and forth, across like Canada, over there from Old Crow, you know, by this side of the hills. It goes all the way down to the coast, those rabbits. And if you're springtime, you see it. You'll see that that the willows, if it's the snow is this deep, that's as far as it's just like it's got leveled off. With the willows that have got eaten up, you know, they're like this. where they're traveling by Fort Yukon. It goes straight down that way and go to the coast. 15 years from there, it's going to come back this way. But one of the things I'm really pissed off about is the game wardens are against us shooting red beavers, and or not if they block the creeks, then we're in trouble. But that's what they, so you don't let them know that they ate the red muskrats or beaver, so that way they don't see nothing. Mm-hmm. We don't sell the skin, we don't sell it. You just use it for some clothing or something. Yeah. But that's, yeah. You wouldn't find beaver up there where we come from. And you'll see them over there on the big lakes and away from the creeks of mm-hmm. running waters.
I was looking at your notes here about the projects you worked on for Fish and Game, and you have written here use areas, hunting and fishing use areas. Huh? You worked on a project for Fish and Game about hunting and fishing areas that people went to.
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar? Can you tell us about that?
Doing what?
Study identifying hunting and fishing areas that people used.
Oh.
Was that something you worked on? To put it on a map?
Yeah. Well, there's one village I went to, the only thing they got us, and this is a is that the first place of northern jackfish. And you don't see the jackfish, but you just see those little ones. The birth of, and I'm talking about millions of them. Lots of it. And it's a jungle area with a lot of water. places where the, I don't know how it survived, but these little ones, as soon as the fall time comes and it's freezing time, the water actually starts moving down.
Mm-hmm.
And when it happens, they all go for the river, and it goes down the river behind Fairbanks, down that way, strictly through that area. They all go down the river, and then they, well, so I've been down the village, the 70 village I work with this village for about 25 years, personally, I think. I clean up the river for 25 village. I went to every village and got ourselves together and all the chiefs and all the top local people that are interested in getting their water so they can drink clean water, just not absolutely nothing wrong with it. Before it was, we have our neighbors are dumping into it. Yeah, I don't like to say white men, but that's who they are. They use it for slop hill. And everything is being dumped into the river. And so we cut that out. And
okay.
for that I I went down to Lower 48 and had them participate in it. We told them that this has to be done not only for us, but for you guys too. And this one guy come up to me and he said, he's very thankful that because this lake is full of garbage and all kinds of junks, and now he said, nice, clean, clear water. I can even walk around in it without getting. So that's what they say. Because they're changing their own rivers, and by not only us, but we're the only one in the United States actually have a clean water for Yukon River. 70 people got together and sat together, and they sang their own songs, and they deliver their own life about how a lot of things have changed for them, and how everything's clean. No longer are they just throwing stuff in the river. We went as far as taking each village and clean them out, take all those garbage and take it out and ship it out. We're shipping up stuff that like oil tanks, different trucks, all engines, all garbage. We're just sending it back to the place where they came from, and they're using the same stuff by melting it, or however way they. So everybody's getting something out of it, and what it does for us is that I no longer see somebody spilling gas and oil in an outboard motor and then just throw the can away. They don't do that anymore. They take it up and they take it over there and they put it where it's supposed to go.
Was that program recognized? Did people recognize the work that you did?
The President of the United States recognized it, so I think everybody did.
Okay.
Yeah. Because they all of a sudden found out that that we have we were recognized, and all 70 chiefs, 70 chiefs that got together and said, well, even the little ones, they don't throw stuff in the old river anymore. You don't see it. Yeah, it's a miracle for us, because the United States is a very shitty place as far as all things go.
Dirty place.
Yep.
Yeah, because they just use everything for slop hill. I can go down to the river and drink it because of how good it is.
Do you remember taking any boat trips when you worked for Fish and Game, like you went up the Porcupine, or you drove the boat up and down the Yukon with Dave Anderson? Did you guys do trips together?
No.
You were his boat driver?
Oh yeah, but that's so that that's so I can get to take to go around the community itself and walk around with us, and also sit there and listen in on what's going on, because we're exchanging with elders that are mostly there in their own language, and it's talking about a different way of communication is something that's not really up to it, you know. But they have their own way of explaining their way of life, and so it's kind of very interesting for individuals that are not ever in a native community. I even learn lots, because that's what I learned earlier. I was going to talk that this fish that's going along the ocean that goes up. I asked this one individual that has got my tent outdoors, and what do you use for food when your salmon doesn't come this way? Oh, let's use your boat, he said. So he used canoe, but they took a wind and cut in the boat, and I'm driving a fishing game boat, a little one. And I check all the camps they have, fish camps. They have homes there where their tents. They have their equipment there so that they can take care of their fish so they can put it away. But this was brand new to me. I got a little trout. There's lots of it going along the coastline. And I didn't know that they were going up the Yukon River. And so, later on, I went to Whitehorse, and just yesterday I was looking at the map. There's a map here. Here's Fort Yukon. Here's the mouth of the Yukon River. Here's Canada. And that's closer down there to Whitehorse. Down that part of the world, Whitehorse. It's more, I think Whitehorse was over here. Sucker is down there, down that way, thousands and thousands of miles.
Long way.
Huh?
Long way.
Long ways. So when I was a little kid, coal mining was operating. Those places from California or wherever the goddamn place they're coming from, they went all the way around there, up the Yukon, and then turned around and went back down the other way, up to Whitehorse. Well, those people that were going by were in those big fancy boats, big ones. They never came back. A couple of years ago, they all burnt up. There was about 12 of them there, big ones, man, real big boats. As a young kid, maybe 6, 7 years old, I see them going by. But really interesting.
When you went to the villages for the fish and game, do you think it was helpful that you were native?
It's helpful for them. It's there's nobody ever ask them what are they living on. And you have to, like I said, just because there's salmon out there doesn't mean that I'm eating salmon. Totally no. I mean, I'm not going to... I got better stuff to eat salmon. Yeah.
So they would talk to you, the people in the villages?
That's a trip. I went to the village. I'll just give you 100. I went to one of the villages out there. They won't talk to me. You have to remember that there's societies are totally against each other wherever the hell you go. Just because you're native doesn't mean that native is going to be you're different. You might have something against you without ever even knowing you.
Right.
That kind of thing has existed here a long time ago too. Mm-hmm. But most of the white people that we have came from this way. Mm. I know, because they come from through Canada, they come from the coast, the coastal area. On the other side, they came this way. Most of them, there's a lot of them are elders from that part of the world. They're not from down that way. The ones that we grew up with around here are different than the ones that are down there. Those ones that came that way are looking for money, not the way of life.
Mm-hmm.
These guys that came this way is because they're all of a sudden they have freedom. A freedom of being out there, and we had no problem with anybody. And, I don't know, I just see them and that's it. I mean, their language is different too, but they still learn.
Mm-hmm.
They have sign language, which the same as the native people, they both sign language is identical.
Mm-hmm.
Any way both to look at it. So that's the exchange that kind of. But a lot of them were people that were in wars over the foreign countries. They came in this way and they thought out what a nice place to be. And a lot of them were more from Canada and further. As soon as the other bunch come up from the other side, it was military. And that kind of blew all the young women, they all went that way.
Mm.
Yeah. So I did go down to California and I got married from around the area.
When you worked on projects in the Upper Yukon, when you went to Upper Yukon villages,
yeah,
was it helpful,
yes,
for Fish and Game to have you there as a native person?
Well, nobody ever looked at us as a native person or it's simply exchange, like, what are you up to? Oh, we're trying to find out what sort of food you're depending on. What is it that you're living on? And do you or don't you? You know, there's people eat certain things and some they don't. So that kind of, and in fact, like I would go to Old Crow and go over to next Canada. I've been over there quite a bit. I talk in the same language. Gurchen, we call it. Gurchen is extremely loud of people. Lots. We exist all the way down to the California.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it is. Of course, I can talk to them down there too. Those people, they speak the same language we do. Nobody would say, eh? But we do. Yeah, it's. When I went down there, that's what I followed when I went to the place where they used to make dynamite bomb. Down there in the Indian country. I went there to check it out. Hey, Ninja Doncha, Shanji Gwinzi, how are you? I'm fine, he says.
So, did you like working for Fish and Game?
I liked it because it was the meeting of different people. And they all speak a different language. We don't speak the same language, you know. The Gurchen people speak the same language with a little bit of different dialect, but other than that, it's the same language. My son is teaching language.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he's been in military too, and he speaks that language too, over a foreign country. And so I kind of visit him here while I'm here, so
yeah.
I teach him. They want to know, I just tell them.
Yeah. Well,
was there anything hard about working for the state? Is there anything negative?
No. Nothing with the local people, none at all. It's there. What happens is that they're more excited than them. That's why the white man is with me and he has a hard time getting connections. They turn off. Maybe it's the way they ask the questions, I don't know. It's sometimes they're too direct or whining it or something like that, not making any kind of connections that what we're doing is identifying their use and how often they're using it and where they're getting it from and when they're getting it and how often they're using it. A lot of people don't fish. Just you wouldn't find me fishing for whitefish just because there's whitefish. I wait. There are certain times, just like anything else, you're not going to eat one of your sheep on there when they're skinny. You know. Around here, we wait for the animals to feed on the stuff that the food they eat, and you can see their body turns rich, and that's when you eat them. And not you try to eat it, it's watery. It's watery, and it's not. I don't know who in the hell wants to eat something like that. But the people are, they're, since we're distant apart, especially me. I'm farther north than everybody else. And So, not close.
Uh-huh.
I can't even get in a boat. And I'm walking out there and they look at me up.
Yes, you're very tall.
I don't think so. the people that I come from are all tall.
Uh-huh. When you were working for Fish and Game, was there a issue where there were problems with the hunting and fishing that you helped resolve by working for the state?
Okay, that's interesting. That's okay. We have Fairbanks, Anchorage, that have boats and motors and all kinds of things. Back in time, we have mostly canoes. I kind of grew up with canoes. Everywhere I went, I could carry a canoe. We got a lot of canoes where I come from. We got canoes there now. And we just put them in the cabins. And there's, we got houses up there. We are landowners. Nobody is allowed unless he asks you. And so we actually own the place. What did you ask me?
Well, if there was a conflict that the Fish and Game had with the local communities that your work helped resolve.
Okay. I was the chief of this area for a long time, about 15 years. And I put the community together. First thing I've done was about a power plant. And from there, white men were running this community. They were like the city, they call it. But they were only interested in who they are. I was interested in trying to put lights, water system, turn it off and turn the cold water. Just then, this United States, Alaska became rich with oil. So we had a native guy that was just super smart. He's from Down River. And he became one of the money handlers down Washington, Juneau, native guy. We went to him and we told him, we want to get, we want to have water, running water. We want to have, we don't want people throwing out their shit water and dumping it in our ground holes.
Yeah.
So I went down there and got the money.
Uh-huh.
And so we had, part of the organization, and I never earned a penny. I just had a good time. I got 30 young people, and I got somebody from Fairbanks that knows how to do all this, like planning water system, and so we hired him, and he 30 days time, he trained our members, 30 people, and all those became automatically became putting the water system in, putting our electricity in, and then we set up I set up the tribal government. And at that time, the tribal government doesn't exist. We just have a tribe chief operation, living off the land and stuff like that. And so, by doing that, I went directly to the federal government and asked for the tribal monies that are available for different kinds of activity. So I got all the money that we can get, and so we created our own office system. We created the roads, and we cut it. Damn, I forget what it was. I've done a lot of things.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I worked for 15 years for the community. I never asked for any kind of money. I was just a volunteer. Then I went to school. I went to Fairbanks, and that's when my daughter was born. I got married to a woman from down that way, on the other side of the world. And
how long did you work for Fish and Game?
10 years.
10 years?
Yeah.
Well, that was a long time.
I don't know. It didn't seem like it. But I worked 10 years, but I also, before that, I was working in a power plant. I went to school in Chicago, and I worked food factory in Florida. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you worked for Fish and Game, did you go to council meetings or tribal council meetings to help make introductions and get projects to be approved?
No. It had nothing to do with them. Absolute zero, zero. They're not here interested in our welfare. That we had to do it ourselves. There's no outside. If you go somewhere else, you'll find out that this Yukon River has 70 villages, but a lot of them still have a long ways to go. We might clean up their rivers, and we might clean up their backyard and all their water stuff, and keeping the area clean. That's one thing. But so by creating that that particular 70 villages together and maintain their educating their young people so that that's picking up,
mm-hmm.
because they're going to university more than they ever have.
So
five of my kids all graduated from a high school from
university.
Yeah.
So when Fish and Game came to Fort Yukon, and they wanted to go around and ask people about what they were eating. How did they get that approved, and how did they do that?
They don't really have. I wasn't involved in it, but
okay.
What happened was it started with Fort Yukon, and what they did was they hired a local person, and that local person was writing down what did you do,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what they did was, where did they do it, how did they do it, how they're trapping, they're fishing, they're living out there, and so in the meantime they're also writing down the kind of activities they're involved in with their own, the area they're responsible for. People have, don't go over each other's area. They all have identified areas,
mm-hmm.
that no outsider can just go in there and start using their trap lines or the cabins or anything that they own. But so that was indirectly, that was something was happening, was that most of those people from Fairbanks and Anchorage were coming over this way, and they took they go up the Yukon River, and they go up this Porcupine River, and that's where all the activity is, because there's that's where most of the Gwich'in people used to live. They got cabins all the way up both sides of the river, and all the way up. They kind of indirectly just took over by camping out in these homes and so forth. They don't camp in them, but in the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
because that neighborhood is the areas where each and every one of them is where the moose and other form of animals hang out. A lot of caribou comes down along those Yukon River, that Porcupine River. And right now, the moose is moving. They're moving back to one place. There's a place out there in the country that nobody goes to, and there's about 50 to 60 moose hanging out there, one place. These are bull moose. The females are along the river lakes where they got young ones. But the bull ones, they all go one certain place. But people around here don't bother them because it's a long ways away, and so what so what they did to these people that were coming in, it was set up by the they are the ones that set up the system. When the people can go hunting and fishing and stuff like that. We don't do that. So that when they start coming in, and they're being under the system that they have. And they go up the river, they don't ask nobody. That river is open to anybody. We have no ownership of these cabins we have. We don't have. We can't say we own it, because it's outsider changed the way that things are. And so we have no now we have before the laws were changed in Washington D.C. we fixed it so that we own these places, every place, so they can't use those places anymore, because it belongs to the individuals, their families, or something like down the line. You always go there. Before that, there's nothing you can say or do, or really just drop stuff with their folks and go move something. And you can't go there because they're over there. So what I did was I went to the council meeting, at the regional council meeting. Those people, the fish and game officers, were there, right in their face. Kind of, I picked out certain individuals that I talked to, so they can change the system by saying, first to 10. Well, from now on, it's going to be 10 to 20. This is done because they have days off, a holiday, and they got 10 days free time, like. And so they all come with it here. And all of a sudden, it slipped. I moved it up. But I don't say I moved it up. I mean, there's young people there that's willing to listen, and then all they had to do is just do exactly what they're told. And that's from our part of the step. So
that was changing the hunting season? Is that what you mean?
I'm not changing hunting season, I'm changing the air.
The laws for the hunting season?
No.
No?
The area.
Oh, okay.
The area.
That you can go to.
You can hunt, but then you've got the area that you do it in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're not making any person. All of a sudden, nobody came back. I haven't seen them yet since then. That's because of time they get from their work areas. It doesn't allow them to come out here.
Mm-hmm.
They can't come here during this time. They quit, can't come up to this time either, because it's a little later. So these guys are here and they're out there all as long as the time says it's okay.
Yeah.
Before, there were people in their way, their camps. And
pressure on the land.
Hmm?
Pressure on the land.
Yes. And by doing that, you can't go against groups that you don't know.
No.
All of a sudden, they're not just like us going to the Eskimo country.
Yeah.
Those guys come to our place. We don't go over there to their place. Yeah. We're not allowed.
Right.
I mean, technically.
Right. So did you go and testify to the Board of Game or Board of Fish?
No. Why should I do that? I just talk to them. I walk down the street, I'll just talk to them. And say, you tell them.
Uh-huh.
You tell them. They talk to each other. We talk to each other in the language.
Uh-huh.
It's simple.
Yeah. I think Clarence has an appointment this afternoon, should give him a chance to rest. And
I just had one last question. That just, when you think back about working for Fish and Game, what was that like for you to have worked for them?
I learned a lot. I learned what they all eat, okay? They're not rich with food. It's not like this area. This area has caribou coming, we have moose coming, we have lots of lakes and lots of different fish available. There are fish out there that doesn't exist over there. None. What we have doesn't exist over there. There's lots of it. And this is where the all the ducks and all the other wild birds are come here to breed. There's lots of them. The people are here are not out there shooting them. They're going to shoot one or two, and that's enough. So it's a matter of keeping. Well, that's the way the people always thought anyway. But when the activity, like what I said, when Fairbanks going in there, that kind of spoiled the soup for everybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not that they, it's kind of dangerous too, mm-hmm. In a way.
Okay. Jim, do you have any questions?
The only question that I had is, besides Dave Anderson, does Clarence, does he remember working with anybody else in the division, like Elizabeth Andrews or maybe Mary Pete?
Clarence, the question was, besides Dave Anderson, do you remember anybody else you worked with Fish and Game, like Elizabeth Andrews or Mary Pete or anybody else?
Well, there's, I travel with quite a few of them, and we kind of tend, we do our job just pretty much, so I'm not, it's changing our way of life. It's not something we do. It's I don't talk about my lifestyle. I'm talking about how I'm going to be talking to the local people that I'm
right.
I'm there for, and that's pretty much it. And the documents that the work that I turn in, where it, that's the end of it for me, mm-hmm. because I've never had a back check or I only simply did my job.
Mm-hmm. Did they come back to the village with that report?
No.
When it was done?
No. I turn it into the office, and it's over. Just a couple of months ago, you're talking about. I forget their names, but there's a couple of them still living in Fairbanks.
Right.
And I just ran into one the other day. He came here and he wants to know how to trap for muskrat. So I told him, first thing I told him was, if you're going to go with me, I want you to watch everything I'm doing. Everything. Do not turn your face away. I want you to learn and know what we're doing. This is a question you ask. You want to know what's going on out there. So you pay attention. I'm not going to tell you I'm doing this, I'm doing that. You're going to see me doing it. I saw him not pretend, so he was not, so he wants me to catch muskrats. This was done in March. So I took 6 traps and I caught in my snow goal. And I told him I'm going to be camping out there and in a tent. And the tent is there already, halfway up, it's built with logs, and they just put, he was there, I put it there earlier, and so I took the truck, and I went on, the lake, and the lake was covered with snow. I told him, I got 6 traps, so you watch me. I drove onto the lake, and there's, I stopped. I've been there for a long time in my life. I know exactly where the muskrat houses are. The muskrat houses are not up in the, up out of the water. That happens after the snow, after it makes its house from down underneath, down near its grass. Puts it up, keep piling it up, and then underneath that pile, that there's a, all of a sudden there's a sight of a muskrat comes up and brings up his food and sit in that place where they eat. And so, but they gotta watch me. That's all I said to him. So I said traps, but also that how do I know? Every time there's a big lake, there's fox would go by these houses. And these houses, throws little piss there, little piss. Doesn't do nothing to the house, but just little piss. Me, as soon as I put my feet on it, on that piss. He's not watching, so it doesn't show that it's there. So, so I put my feet on it, and then it takes snow away from the house, and then I knock down that opening there for the for inside, that it eats in there, it sits in there. And he's got a water hole comes out, and it comes up, and it sits in there, got a place to sit in there, and eats those plants that are growing right now at around March. They're edible, like celery. Mm-hmm. That's what they're eating. So I set the trap, and I did that for all 6 places. But each time I step on that little yellow stuff there, just like a little piece of water, muskrat, I put my feet on it. I just wanted to see how long, when he's going to find out that I'm doing that. You know why? Because I got a trick. Next day in the morning, we went there and checking the traps. I got 5 beaver and the 5 muskrat. One got away because it chewed his own feet off. Took off. I took those 5 and put it in, skinned it out, and cooked it out there, outdoors on the campfire. Cook it up, and the tails are hairy. You can take the, cut it off and just slip it off all that hair. And I put it in a pot, and so there's a couple of them in there I didn't cut, tear off, because it's not watching me. I put it in there, but when I finished, I gave him the tail end, the tail ends, and it gave him a whole muskrat. Because the deal was that he'll eat a muskrat if I won't go out there and freeze myself, and I'm doing it from, and I sat there and ate muskrat, I don't mind. But he had to eat that tail. But what I did was, mine is already trained, but I didn't show it to him. I took it, went like this. I put the tail here. Like that. Nice clean tail. Put it out there, and he's looking at it, and he starts chewing on it. David Anderson, I think his name is.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. If you mention it, he's going to get pissed off. But maybe you would, I don't know. So anyway, it took him a time. So it took him a long time, but he ate it. He ate the tail. Okay. My daughter was with me. We were at a sales place over in Fairbanks there, because it's a different kind of sawing place and stuff like that. He just happened to be sitting in there. Hello, Clarence. And then he mentioned, I'm sorry I tipped your boat over with you, he told me. So I told him that when I got in the boat, I was standing sideways on the boat, and I dived backwards, craft come up and got back, and got back in the boat. I didn't say nothing. That he, when I said hello to him, he said, I'm sorry that I tipped you over in the boat. Just prior to that, I was telling my daughter, I gave him muskrat tail. I gave him muskrat tail and a nice clean muskrat that's edible. But not the hairy one, but he finished it, and I told him, I didn't say nothing. And she did. When he said, I'm sorry I tipped you over. And she said, that's okay. You ate his hairy muskrat tail. If you'd say that to him, you remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll ask him about that.
We'll ask him about it. So okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I think it's time to give you a rest.
No, I'm on the rest.
I think we just end this with anything else about subsistence division, but I think we're good.
Thank you.
Subsistence.
Hey, Clarence, please thank Clarence for me.
Yes.
Subsistence was probably a good thing for the people out there, because they have no way of telling the rest of the world what actually they are living on. Like talking about these little fish, and I got that the Eskimo invited me to go out and sheep, get one of those, and the big white animal, fish trout, or no, what the hell they call this?
Polar bear? No, big white animal?
Yeah, it sleeps 4 seconds, 1001, 1002, 1003, 1004, and it goes to sleep, and then it wakes up and looks around 4 seconds. It's a sea lion.
Oh, a bearded seal, no?
Yeah.
Bearded seal?
Yeah, white one. And I got invited by one village because I'm a native person, Indian from, especially Indian. There's one guy, one Indian living in that family. He said, let me take you hunting. And in military, I'm I get 100% for my shooting. I don't miss. I see it quite a ways, but I have to crawl 4 seconds, stop 4 seconds until it came to about size of that small like that. See it when it went 1001, 1002, 1003. I got him right here. The whole town was happy. So next day I had a long line of people talking to me.
Had respect.
I finished my finished my job. I was there for fish and game, but they won't talk to a native Indian. But this Indian showed them that. I didn't tell them that I was in the military 15 years or something. So I'm crack shot, never miss.
That's great.
That's a great story.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, so thank you very much.